Hello and welcome to Jive Talk and the Volvo Sailing Podcast. I'm Guy Swindles and a happy new year to all our listeners. In this first show of 2010, we look back at the Sydney to Hobart race with the voice of Aussie sailing Rob Mundell, while Matt Sheehan and I look ahead to the London Boat Show, where we bumped into multi-Olympic gold medal winner Shirley Robertson, who tells us about heading home to Scotland. But first, as always, it's the Volvo Sailing Podcast news headlines. The five-man jury for the 33rd America's Cup's been announced under Chairman David Tillett from Australia. Spain's Iker Martinez and Xabi Fernandez lead the 49er World Championships in Grand Bahama, with British pairs in second, third and fourth. Briton Geoff Holt becomes the first quadriplegic sailor to make it across the Atlantic single-handed. And belated congratulations to Andrew Sace and his Beneteau first 42 true. Overall winner of the Sydney to Hobart, he takes the Tattershall's Cup. And that's where we begin, with Rob Mundell, the voice of Australian sailing, and of course connected to the Sydney to Hobart for the last 35 years, where he watched the latest edition turn into something of a procession for line honours.
Guy, that's absolutely right. The race was essentially over inside Sydney Harbour straight after the start. We had the showdown between the two near-identical supermaxis, Alfa Romeo and Wild Oats 11. And then from England, we had the big ICAP Leopard. So it was going to be a fabulous race, or we expected a fabulous race for line honours between the two. But really, it came down to a couple of manoeuvres inside Sydney Harbour at the start. Wild Oats 11 won the start, but then was out-jived, for the want of a better term, going to the heads by Alfa Romeo, the Kiwi boat. Alfa Romeo led outside the heads, and then with the weather pattern that evolved, all the way down the coast, Neville Crichton, the skipper of Alfa Romeo, just made sure there were absolutely no passing lanes.
A strange race in many ways. You're usually expected to be blowing a bit of a hoolie, something to be going on, but this was a real light wind race, wasn't it?
Very, very strange. All the way, every part of the race, and the forecasters just had a nightmare. They probably could have done better with a crystal ball on this one. Roger Badham, who's the guru, says that in his life of yachting meteorology, his own and that along with another friend who is also very experienced in meteorology, going back for, like, they've researched it for almost a century, never been a system like this. And it all boiled down to a cyclone that came across the West Australian coast just prior to Christmas Day. And normally in December, you could expect that cyclone to just break up into a rain depression as soon as it comes across the coast. But this time it didn't. And the cell of low pressure came right across the continent. That combined with a big trough that went north-south down the continent, and it was just a mess. And I doubt that there was actually one forecast for any stage of the race where it was absolutely spot on, and it was a nightmare for everyone. But what it did do, Guy, was it made for a lot of reaching and running conditions, and that in turn made it a lot easier for Alfa Romeo to make sure that they kept that cover on the other two challenges.
What did it mean to Alfa Romeo, this one? Because it was, ICAP Leopard had come there, they'd won the Fastnet, they'd won another couple of races as well. They were looking for the Grand Slam almost this year. This was a big win, and Wild Oats, of course, obviously, terrific history in the race as well. This was a big win, though.
I certainly was, and as Neville Crichton said for Alfa Romeo, was sweet revenge. Wild Oats 11, owned by Bob Oatley, was going for its fifth straight line honours in the Hobart race, unprecedented in the event. Then we had ICAP Leopard, as you say, coming down, Mike Slade wanting to cap his world off with a line honours win in the big one, in the Hobart race. I must say that ICAP Leopard went remarkably well compared to when she was here 2 years ago. They've modified the boat, they've taken a lot of weight out of it, and for much of the distance, it was actually in second place, right down to towards Tasman Island. They held down second place. But then they decided they weren't going to beat Alfa Romeo by following them. So they decided to go offshore. At the same time, Wild Oats 11 decided to go inshore and found more breeze and closed the gap and got up to second place. But it really meant something for Neville Crichton more than just winning the race, because 4 years ago, he had that yacht, Alfa Romeo, brand new in the water, and suddenly Bob Oatley arrived on the scene with a near sister ship. Crichton went into the race absolute hot favourite to take line honours. No one expected Wild Oats 11 to do any good, because she'd only been in the water 2 weeks, and lo and behold, they did. They got the race record, they won on handicap and got line honours. So Neville really has been pretty distressed about that result for a long while, and here he is. He came back and he got what he wanted.
A very quick one, Rob, as a proud Australian, does it hurt more that the Kiwis have pinched it?
Oh, look, the Kiwis, they're great competitors. Just look at the Volvo race and what they achieved there. There's great, enormous rivalry between Australia and New Zealand, and Neville deserved the win, and Bob Oatley was very gracious in defeat when he got to the boat got to the dock in Hobart. He said, look, they deserved the win. There was no way we were going to beat them the way they sailed the race, but all it means to us is that you learn how to lose, and we'll come back next year and go for our fifth.
Rob, thanks, mate, for that fight. But finally, of course, we only think really possibly about the Sydney to Hobart in the Northern Hemisphere, but this is the middle of the really Australasia's yachting season, isn't it? There's plenty of other big events with big-name sailors going on down there.
Well, Guy, instead of being in the snow like you are over there, I was on the beach at 5:30 this morning and having a wonderful time in the surf, and it's high summer. And 30 degrees most days. So, yes, we've, as well as the Hobart race, we've just had another option where you come north to even warmer weather. You do Pittwater to Coffs Harbour up in northern New South Wales, and now I've just established two new events here, which is Coffs to Paradise up to here on the Gold Coast, and on Sunday we start a new series here, a five-day series called Sail Paradise out of the Gold Coast. So lots of sailing activity here and lots of pleasure in this wonderful summer that we're experiencing.
Now it's off to the London Boat Show, where Matt Sheehan and I went along to the preview day. But before we get into the nuts and bolts of the boats on view, we bumped into Shirley Robertson, the multi-Olympic gold medalist, who's looking forward to going home this year.
Yeah, I'm here at the launch for the Brain Dolphin Scottish Series, which takes place in a small town on the west coast of Scotland called Tarbert. It's great fun. I love doing it. I went last year and will definitely go again this year.
How did you get involved? I know you are Scottish, obviously, but how did you get involved with this particular event?
Well, obviously, I'm Scottish. And for many years, I couldn't do it because it always clashed with an Olympic event in Holland. It was always the same week. But since then, I mean, it's famous within Scotland. And, you know, my husband's actually from Northern Ireland, and he'd gone every year since he was 15, you know, and had lots of tall stories. But it's a lovely place. I mean, one of the most beautiful places in the world. One year I actually went by RIB. I didn't drive. We went by RIB. And as we entered the lovely natural harbour of Tarbert, there was a school of dolphins with us. And, I mean, it just doesn't happen every day. I mean, just an absolutely beautiful, beautiful place. Clear light, mad weather, obviously, and great sailing. You know, really, really lovely sailing.
Well, that's the important bit, because you have sailed everywhere pretty much. How does it shape up on that front?
Well, it's challenging. I mean, you're racing on a sea lock, so, you know, you have a bit of tide and you have high land and there's a lot going on, but in a way that makes it more appealing. You know, it's not like sailing on the Solent or, you know, on open water. It has its own, you know, it has a bit of variety, and I love that. I love to go somewhere new, which is different. You have to think about it a bit differently. Sometimes it's frustrating too, though, but it's good. It's a lovely event.
Now, on a personal note, you're CNN sailing correspondent. How are you making the move? You're still sailing as well, though, as corresponding, I guess.
Well, last year, lucky enough to do the iShares Extreme 40 circuit, which I loved. I mean, after 20 years of going very slowly in Olympic boats, it's scary going very quickly. But you kind of get used to it, you know, in a way. Although they keep making the courses ever smaller, you know, last year we raced off St. Mark's Square in Venice and in Amsterdam and the canals. And so they make it hard for you, but yeah, I really enjoy it. And at the moment, we're doing an Asian circuit. We're in the middle of that. So I'll continue to do that, and then hopefully, yeah, get a sponsor and do the rest of the year in the Extreme 40.
But make sure you're in Tarbert in time for the Scottish series.
Yeah, no, definitely be there. In a way, but the main thing I think, which is really lovely about Scottish series, is it's a small town, but absolutely everybody in the town is involved in the event, and they're proud. You know, they're proud of their town, and they're proud of this event they've had for such a long time. And in a way, I think that's what gives it a sparkle. That's what makes it be one of the gems in the sailing calendar.
Well, next we set Matt loose as he went to look at some of the new boats on offer this year.
So one of the first things you see when you come into the show, certainly on the yacht side, is the glamorous new Oyster launch. I'm here with David Tiedemann, CEO of Oyster. David, tell us about your new launch.
575, it's a great new boat. This is hull number one. We've been promoting it for just over a year, as I'm sure you're aware, but this is the first time anybody's been able to see it. It's getting a very exciting reception. There's some things about the boat that are unique for us. Twin wheel at 575 length, 57.5-foot length. That's the first time we've been able to do that. The benefits in the cockpit and the layout of the aft deck are there to be seen. And if we compare it with the 56, which has been a very successful boat for us, we built 75 of them. The four-cabin layout is maintained but larger, and it's only 1.5 feet longer, but it's nearly 15% more volume inside. Great boat.
Interesting launch, and some might say an interesting time to be launching a boat of this type. It's obviously not a bargain basement boat by any stretch. Interesting time to be launching a prestigious new boat.
Well, I think one of the nice things about Oyster as a brand and as a product range is that we sell boats for people to go off on their adventures. It's not a weekend sailing boat. I think under recessionary times as we've had, the decision process is different if you're buying a boat for weekend sailing or if you've got this dream that you want to do in the next 2 years. You've got a window of opportunity either with family or work. And actually, for some people, we've seen them accelerate their retirement plans, decide they can now's the time to go sailing.
Seems like a good idea to accelerate your retirement plans. I like that one. David Tiedemann, many thanks. Well, for those that are interested in performance boats, last year J-Boats launched the J97, which went on and dominated last year's Cowes Week. And this year, J-Boats have got the 97 here again, but they've also got the J95. Now, I'm with Becky Eplett from Key Yachting. And Becky, tell us a bit about the new J95. How does she differ from the 97?
In actual fact, the boats are very similar in length. They're both just under 32 feet. But the J95 is the first boat in 30 years of J-Boat production that J-Boats have ever built with a lifting centreboard. So it has a shoal draft keel and a retracting centreboard that retracts up into the keel. So the boat can sail very, very happily in its shallow draft format, or indeed with the centreboard down. And the reason for this, we've never produced one before, the reason for this is environmentalists and agencies like that are there's less and less dredging is allowed in marinas, certainly in the USA, and the same in the UK. So it's basically to allow you access to shallow draft. But like all the other J's, it's a performance boat. And in fact, this boat, we've not yet sailed it. This is the first boat in Europe, so it's its European debut at London Show. But in the States, where they have been racing it, the boat's performance upwind is fantastic and is comparable to the J105. So we do expect great things in terms of the performance of the boat.
And it looks very much like a J-boat. I mean, we're just standing here under the bow with its bowsprit, the distinctive J-boat's bowsprit, and a very distinctive J-boat hull shape. Presumably, from what you say then, it is anticipated that this will be a racing class just like many of the others.
We think so. I mean, I think this first boat that we've sold has been sold to a gentleman in Lymington, and I think it's his seventh J-boat. So he's had J92s, J105s, and he is a racing man. But obviously the shoal draft keel means he's got, his plans are to do a little bit of racing and a little bit of cruising, and that's exactly what it's set out for. I don't think that in the UK we'll see strong one design fleets, but certainly it's a dual purpose boat. So for those people that are keen to do some racing, we think this boat is going to hold its own, and certainly from what we've seen in the States, it will do so.
And I see that she's sitting on a trailer here. Trailer sailor, I guess.
She's a big trailer sailor, and theoretically, I mean, I don't think you'd want to be moving her around every weekend, but no, it is possible. It's just within the towing length, and you can.
And what length is she?
She's just under 32 feet. You mentioned earlier on the bowsprit, the retractable bowsprit. On this boat, because we envisage a lot of single-handed interest, certainly in the States that's what they've had, the bowsprit package is actually an extra option, and it's a little bit different from the other J's, if you notice, because the bowsprit here on this boat actually retracts right into the hull. And there's a little... Can you see?
Yeah.
There's an end cap that goes over it. So in actual fact, you get very, very smooth flush lines, so, like all the other J's.
Right. So, of course, the big question is, what does she cost?
Well, the show price, we have a boat show offer on the boat. So for a boat ordered at the London Boat Show, the price, the basic boat price is £110,600 plus VAT.
Better have two.
Becky Epplett there with the information on the J boats. Still one more to go, though, for Matt.
Well, I have to confess that actually one of the most exciting parts of the boat show for me is the dinghy section. There's always so much going on, and this year there's a lot going on the RS stand, because RS have just launched a brand new boat. Some people in the dinghy scene may well have already heard it, but this is the first time we've seen the real production boat, and I'm with Martin Wadhams from RS. Martin, tell us a bit about this new boat.
We've been planning this boat for several years now. The background is that we feel that single-handed sailors have seen many of the new high-performance classes come along and been very excited by things like RS700s, Musto skiffs, even the Blade Rider Moths. But those boats are, you know, great image, really exciting boats to sail, but realistically, in order to be competitive in them, you have to put in a lot of hours on the water, and you have to sail on the right piece of water to have enough space to make them work. And what we've been hearing is that there was a gap in the market for a real performance boat that was much, much more user-friendly, and that's the background to the RS100.
Now, this is a single-handed boat. It's a sit-out boat by the looks of it, with an asymmetric spinnaker. But no trapeze, no racks, just some rather elegant, sexy-looking wings.
Yeah, that's exactly right. The wings are effectively moulded in for simplicity in construction and comfort in use. As you can see, we've been able to shape those so that it's a sitting-out boat, but it's just about the most comfortable sitting-out boat that you'll have ever been in. And by taking away the trapeze, which so many of the high-performance boats have, it makes the whole thing much easier to learn to do, much more forgiving. Means that, you know, you stand a real chance of mastering single-handed sailing with a spinnaker, which of course transforms single-handed sailing. You know, it's none of this pointing straight downhill. It's the sailing the angles that double-handed sailors have been enjoying for a good number of years now.
Now, you've already got a boat along these kind of lines, the RS Vario, which is a single-handed boat with an asymmetric spinnaker. How does this boat differ from the Vario?
When we developed the Vario, it was very, very much in the early days of asymmetric spinnakers on single-handers. And that boat was aimed more at an all-round market. It's a much simpler boat, much less expensive because of that, but it's not as quick, and generally was a boat aimed at sort of versatility more than performance. And the 100 is an epoxy foam sandwich hull construction. It's got carbon spars. It's a lighter boat all round, more easily driven, bigger rig for the heavier sailors, and we also do a smaller mainsail version for the lighter weight sailors. But basically, it's a more performance orientated package.
Martin Wadhams, we have to thank there. So after Matt had looked at the key boats, he and I went for a stroll to see what we could see. Well, with Matt Sheehan now just wandering along the back of the hall here at the boat show in London, you've had a chat about a couple of the new boats on the market, Matt, and now we're walking past some of the others. Impressions?
Well, I think the first impression is that, dare I say, you do have to fight your way to the back of the hall to find the boats. But when you do, it is worth it. There's an interesting mix. I have to say, there are fewer boats here than there have been in the past. But there are some interesting mix. We're just walking past now We've got the Grand Soleil 54. She's a sort of typical cruiser racer. I say typical. She's a very elegant cruiser racer, but typical of that sort of genre. She's worth having a look at. There's the J boats that are worth having a look at too. Then moving on, we've got the Legends. And then we've got Bavaria. We've got a range. We'll just wander down and have a look at them. Bavaria have well known for their very considerable broad range of cruisers and cruiser racers. They've got an interesting mix here. They've got a, what have we got? We've got a Bavaria Sport powerboat there. Well, that's crept in from the other side of the hall. Bavaria 32 Cruiser. That's a new boat. That'll be worth a look. That's quite a tough market to be in at the moment, these high-volume production boats. What is she? She's £75,000, including VAT. So I'm sure there'll be plenty of people having a look at her. Alongside her is the Bavaria Cruiser 38. Now, she's been around for a little while. And then just nestled under the bow of both of these boats, we've got a little Storm 22 here, a little sports boat. She looks like a little trailer sailor, will be a bundle of fun. Moving on along the line, we have the Island Packet 46. And for those that are into blue water cruising, Island Packet have been around since God was a boy, it would seem. And here, time and time again, with their very, very distinctive blue water cruiser. She's worth a look. And then an English name, Moody's. Well, of course, Moody have been a British yard, and they've been part of the London Boat Show since before I was wearing short trousers, which was a considerably long time ago. And of course, they've reinvented themselves now, because Moody were bought by Hansa and have now come out with two very distinct ranges. They have one deck saloon, the DS45, which is here. Very interesting boat. That was the first one of those was launched a couple of years ago now, and really took everybody by surprise. And then they followed that up with a classic range, and we've got one alongside, the Classic 45. So I'm sure they'll be looked at quite keenly. Well worth a look if you haven't seen them before, and especially if you know the name Moody and have wondered what happened to the yard. Well, come and have a look at these two, because a lot's happened since you last saw them, I suspect.
So, Matthew, you mentioned that perhaps less boats than normal. Is the old global downturn still affecting this market?
I think it is. I mean, obviously, people who are selling boats would be keen to sort of buoy it up and say, well, it's OK. And actually, to a certain degree, in this country, because of the weakness of the pound, boat sales have held up quite well. But it is tough, there's no question. People don't have to have a boat, sadly, whereas, you know, we all have to have a car. So it has affected the industry, but people have found the last year not quite as bad generally as they might have thought. Of course, this year, well, who knows what's going to happen this year. It could be a very, very tough year indeed, but you never know. It's very interesting that I've talked to a number of people today already that have reflected their view that's been held all through last year, that actually a lot of their clients would give up their boat. Their boat would be the very last thing that they gave up. You know, they'd sell the second car, they'd sell the horse, they'd sell the whatever, but they won't get rid of their boat. Well, let's hope that's the case.
Final thought, just perhaps on the amount of new boats here. Is less than normal?
Yes, there are fewer new launches here. That's, I mean, there are, I can't remember exactly how many there are, but it's single figures in the sailing side. That's partly a reflection of the market at the moment, tough times. It's also partly a reflection in a change in the way that the whole boat show circus works. And so now we've got a lot of the manufacturers launched new boats at Southampton in September. And then we've got Paris, which is in December, so a lot of new launches happen there, especially the French ones. And then there's the Dusseldorf Boat Show, which happens later on in January, which is sort of Europe's biggest indoor boat show. So there's an awful lot of pressure on builders to sort of as to when they're going to launch their boats. And unfortunately, over the years, I have to say the London show has lost out a bit. It's still an important show, there's no question about that, but we haven't quite got the same number of new launches that we've seen maybe 10 or 15 years ago.
Now, Matthew, we talked about boats. Obviously, time to talk about clothing, both of us being such fashionable men. What have you made of new advancements being launched here this year?
Well, there's a lot going on. There are some companies like Henry Lloyd, among the big names, people like Henry Lloyd, who are developing and refining their range. Musto doing the same, several of the other well-known brands are doing the same. So there's always lots to see in clothing. It seems to be the thing that drives the marine market at the moment, clothes, clothes, clothes. But I think, having had a look around here, the company that interests me the most this year is Gill, actually. Gill have launched a whole new range of racing gear. There's too much to go into here, but you should have a look. It's some very interesting sports boat gear, some dinghy gear, and they're working in areas where there are some gaps, I'd say, in the market. Well worth having a look.
Well, that's it for this time. Please join us again next time when we'll have all the latest from the world of sailing. And remember to check in at regular intervals to www.volvooceanrace.org.